football on off the ball.
It's the producers in football form. If you're really going to mess up a football club, how could you do it better than this? I just don't think you could.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball's Breakfast Bite. A bite-sized serving of Ireland's breakfast sports show.
Let's get to the football end of things. Delighted to have on the line Neil Ewing and Sean Bonner-Sullivan. Morning, lads. How are things?
Hey, Shane.
Good, guys.
How are things?
How are you?
Keeping well. We're getting the calculators out here, trying to work out what's the story for the weekend. Can I start, lads? We're going to get to the football. Can I start with the Leitrim stuff? Because this has been a story that's been doing the rounds all week. Naturally, Leitrim obviously having to, in their thoughts, forfeit their fixture last weekend. Neighbours over there, Neil. What was your take on this one? Because it's been a bizarre story.
Yeah, I think first of all, Shane, it's sad that it came to that, and it's probably scary for the GAA in terms of where football is in some counties across the country. I'm a little bit surprised that it happened in Leitrim because they are predominantly a football county. They're a football mad county. You know, there's some of the counties there in the southwest of the country that are probably, the struggles have been more apparent in recent years. Listen, I don't know the nuances of it. I'm not into the weeds of it. There's a lot probably that's happened in Leitrim that a lot of us haven't heard about this week. My overwhelming feeling is, and it's probably something I've seen over decades here in Sligo, there's a trend, I think, among county boards or county board administrators in counties, particularly the weaker counties, that if something happens, say nothing about it and it will go away and people will forget about it. And I think some of the comments that were made by people during the week, there was very thinly veiled some very thinly veiled comments made by people this week at Leitrim Football, people who have been involved in Leitrim senior setups over recent years, players within Leitrim. And I think with the comments that were made, it needed the county board to come out and, I guess, reassure Leitrim people that there is a plan in place for Leitrim Football. This is the future that they see for Leitrim Football. And I think show a bit of backbone for the footballers in the county, for the future footballers in the county, and also show supporters that there's something worth getting behind. Like, if I'm a fundraiser in Leitrim and I'm going out in the next number of weeks, months, even years, and I'm trying to fundraise for football in Leitrim, it's very difficult because in the vacuum since the comments that were made during the week, I think apathy spawns from that. Whereas if somebody from Leitrim County Board had come out, spoken passionately about football in the county and the plan that's there, it will be a very, very different story.
Sean, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, it shouldn't have happened. It shouldn't have happened, lads. I mean, like, okay, I know Stephen Poacher has been kind of saying during the week that he's a very, very small squad, and he gave his reasons for why he keeps a small squad, and he's got a very young squad. Was it 6 of the under-20s? He released back to their team during the week. I know they were beaten well by Galway. But what I can't get my head around is, did the senior players in the panel not go to him and sit down with him and say, geez, Stephen, this can't happen. This just can't happen. Like, we'll find players from somewhere. I have a good friend, I won't name him. He's involved in club coaching in Leitrim. And I was talking to him during the week about it. His club had offered players to go and play and fulfil the fixture. And I'm sure he wasn't the only club in that bracket. Play the game. It's. I think Neil hit the nail on the head there. If it came out after then as to why the manager or the management had to go and seek players from other club teams to make up a team, you know, it would have been reflected on better than the way they went about it, I feel. And look, again, We're not privy to what's going on in there, but I think it shouldn't have happened, and I think the players could have, a lot of the senior players could have gone to him and said, we can't leave this happen for Leitrim football, for football as a whole. Let's fulfil the fixture, whoever we can find out there. I'm sure we can go around Leitrim and find the next level of good club player that aren't in the county set up for whatever reason, bring them in and fulfil the fixture. And I'm sure those players would have jumped at it too, to do it for the good of Leitrim football. I don't think Stephen Poacher helped himself during the week. in terms of, look, I know he had to come out and give his side of the story, but I think in those media things that he did, he had little jibes at the way Leitrim football has been over the past few years. I'd love to hear Andy Moran's take on it, because what he did for Leitrim football was second to none. So I think it's a mess overall. It's not a good news story for Leitrim. It's not a good news story for the GA, but I think it's something that could have been avoided if people had sat down, taken a breath, and had go about it in a different way. Not a good way, because you were trying to pull players that aren't on your panel to play a game, but do it. And the rest of the country would have realised why they had to do that instead of going this way about it, I feel.
Coming soon to your Off the Ball podcast feed.
I'm nervous. Police will use tear gas.
Yes. Oh, Jesus.
You're looking at two of the best professional wrestlers in Mexico City.
Saying we won after your team's won a football game is like saying I had sex after I'm watching porn.
So if you hear anything about the Gringo Local, that's me, okay?
We were on our own at 3,600 meters.
We have that mark as narcos, cocaine, violence, as a Pablo Escobar thing.
To be honest with you, if I never see Route 40 again, I will be a happy, happy man.
Diverted, a 10-part Off the Ball original series telling the story of sport and other things all the way through Latin America.
I thought Route 40 was the most lonely road in the world. Turns out Route 25 is somehow even lonelier.
Available soon for free on the OTB app.
Nathan Murphy is on the line. Good morning, Nathan.
Morning, lads.
So talk us through it. Positive signs after last night.
Yeah, we got the win. We took advantage of playing against the inferior opponent. We recovered from an early setback. It's, the second time in three away games where we've come from behind to win. I think previous to Finland, it was, 12 years that we'd managed that feat. And I've played some decent football at times. I think tactically what Hal Grimson tried to do worked. The use of Manning and the use of Johnston on the wings and keeping them out wide and on their natural footing seemed to make a difference. That was clearly the game plan, to expose the Bulgarian fullbacks. And I think overall it was a very positive first half performance. Second half was very scrappy, but I think there's positives to take from that as well, because Bulgaria tried to get very physical. Ireland were definitely a bit more streetwise than they have been previously. They, you know, they took their tackles, they took their free kicks, they allowed themselves time to regroup and to build, and maybe we didn't have the necessary quality from those set pieces. But, you know, the second half was largely played in the Bulgarian half. There was that one moment right in injury time where you thought maybe Bulgaria were about to get free, but, you know, again, they just didn't have any real quality in the final third except for that one goal they scored. So, yeah, definite positives to take. Anytime we win a game now, it's a massive positive. But, you know, as we sort of predicted and expected, Bulgaria, not a good team.
I definitely want to get to the positives as well. But just on that second half, I mean, first of all, our joke yesterday, Nathan, about a Football Manager game going to the end actually happened in the second half, remarkably. But that moment that you touched on there, where Bulgaria get into the box at the end, and had they converted that, we're having a very different conversation this morning about how passive Ireland were in the second half, aren't we?
Matt Doherty mentioned that he felt Ireland were very passive in the second half. I didn't get that sense. I just thought it was very hard to get any sort of a rhythm at all, because the referee sort of set the tone very early with a couple of fairly soft yellow cards for a sort of tug in the jersey, and a Mikey Johnston in a bit of trickery catches the player accidentally. Like, neither of them really felt like they needed to be yellow cards, and that stopped the rhythm. And then there's the clash of heads with Robbie Brady, and the second half just never got going. Like, I don't know if Bulgaria brought much except a bit of physicality and trying to kick Ireland a bit more in the second half and see would that disturb Ireland. I thought Ireland stood up to it reasonably well. They used the physicality to their advantage by just drawing an awful lot of fouls from them. So, you know, was it the same flowing performance as the first half? No, but I don't think the referee or Bulgaria allowed that.
No.
But they kept their concentration. Like, there was no slips, as there was in the first half, and you touched on it earlier a couple of times with Nathan Collins. You know, generally, the mistakes were cut out in the second half. It was a completely forgettable second half, and maybe as Doherty himself admitted, it was a bit passive, but I just felt the flow of the game didn't really allow Ireland at any stage to build any momentum in the second half.
No, you're right. Look, it would have taken a team of extraordinary talent to have made that an entertaining second half because of the opposition. There was a period, I noted it, about halfway through the second half where we were getting real sloppy and just slow with the passing, but it didn't matter in the end. We were all surprised at the starting lineup. Would that suggest that had Callum O'Dowd been fit, that he would have started, do you think? That they would have gone with the double left?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think what's happening here is Hal Grimson is working within the confines of an international camp, which is these players get in late Sunday night, early Monday morning. They go on the training pitch on Monday. It's more just a quick run around, get the legs moving. Tuesday, they travel. Wednesday, they have a bit more of a session on the pitch here, but they have a lot of meetings, they have a lot of stuff working tactically, more on the video side of things, and as Doherty said, walkthroughs. So I think a lot of what they're doing is worked out in advance in terms of the team selection, the shape, figuring out what the opposition are going to do, and having their 11 in mind before the players even come into camp. And you would expect what was going to happen was Callum O'Dowd would have played in that advanced role on the left-hand side. And whereas we all assume when O'Dowd drops out and Manning comes in, Manning's sort of player 23 in the squad, and that they're looking at other options. You know, we discussed maybe Finn Azaz dropping out to the left-hand side. Mikey Johnston would have been the obvious one, having played there before. But Hal Grimson spoke about it before the game, that he wanted two left-footers on the left-hand side, two right-footers on the right-hand side, and it worked. Brian Manning had probably his best game in an Ireland jersey last night.
To listen to this morning's Off The Ball Breakfast in full, become a member at offtheball.com/join now.